Blog Talk Radio.
GoDamnMedia.com.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger, and I'm your host, Cal Fritzy, here to talk with you about the issues of Islam, how it affects the West and the Western world in general. I have a guest tonight. He will be joining us shortly. Of course, that is Paul Sutcliffe. He is the author of a wonderful book. I'm pausing because I dropped something. Sorry. Paul Sutcliffe is the author of Stealth Jihad Phase 2, and that is the target of American colleges. I will explain to you, and I will actually let him explain to you a little later on as to why he felt compelled to write this book and why I think every parent and even every non-parent should have this book in their catalog if they are studying the issues of Islam and what they want to do about the scourge. Before I move on, I want to do something, and this is totally out of the ordinary, and this has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with Islam. However, I want to give a shout out to a company that I deal with on a regular basis. I live in the middle of nowhere, and so a lot of things, I have to order a lot of things online. I get a lot of my books online. I get things online, this and that and the other thing online. As you know, I also like to collect T-shirts. I have quite the impressive Infidel T-shirt collection going on here. And one company I deal with is Cafe Press. Cafe Press is the most wonderful online store to deal with. They are very, very good. Their prices are fairly reasonable. The quality of the clothing is par none, and the customer service is 100%. I ordered something. Unfortunately, I ordered it in the wrong size, and it was, well, it was too small. I got in touch with Cafe Press. They fixed me up right away. They did not charge me for anything. As a matter of fact, they sent me a tag where I could just slap it on the package, send it right back to them, and they even credited me. And they are going to ensure that I have my resized T-shirt sent in the mail via express mail, so I should receive my T-shirt within 2 business days. This is what a great company does. This is what a great corporation does, is that they are out there. You are the client. Cafe Press works very, very hard to guarantee 100% satisfaction. When I was speaking with the rep, I said, look, I have to say something to my listeners and let them know that there is some very, very good things going on out there in the corporate world. Your corporation is one of them, so I want to say thank you, Cafe Press, for your excellent service and for helping me out in my ton of need, and that is resizing me with my T-shirt. Well, okay then, enough of that. Back into the realm of the program, and of course we are discussing the issues of Islam. Now, there are a lot of things going on out there, as you know. Islam never sleeps, rust never sleeps. I want to talk to you about one thing in particular that really disturbed me this week. It's a story out of Canada. It really bothered me quite a bit. We have been listening to so much going on out there on the global planet about the havoc that Islam is wreaking. We, of course, have been apprised as to what's been going on in Kenya and what happened in Pakistan, when two suicide bombers bombed up a church, and the death toll in Pakistan as it stands right now is there are about 80 Christians dead. What happened at the Westgate Mall in Nairobi with over 70-some-odd people dead? There is footage and there are testimonials coming out. We are listening to what the police are saying with the army when they went in the aftermath into that mall and what they discovered. They discovered horrendous things. They discovered people hanging by hooks. They discovered people had been gouged. Their eyes were gouged out. We found out that men were castrated all before they died. One thing in particular that very, very much upset me is that some people had their fingers sharpened. Not their fingernails, their fingers sharpened, and they were forced to write their names in that blood from their fingertips. This is Islam, ladies and gentlemen. This is how devastatingly capable they are of absolute depravity within the darkness of the human soul. Kenya, one tip off the iceberg. Pakistan, one tip off the iceberg. Just when you think that they cannot sink any lower, they find a new way to nauseate, shock, and make us repel even further. Islam is the scourge. I play that opening song, and I want to thank Joe Dan Gorman for his permission to use that song. I play that song at the beginning because it is true. I am the infidel your imam warned about. And praise God and pass the ammunition. I am so tired. I'm fed up to hear with Islam. I'm sick and tired of reading in my dailies, and I'm sick and tired of visiting my blogs and finding out exactly what they're doing next and what they're up to next, what they plan next. We have it in our own backyard. I believe you're familiar with the Via Rail bombers. Well, the attempted Via Rail, that's Via Rail trains. It's a Canadian corporation. These two idiots, they tried to hijack a Via Rail train and carry it down into New York City and blow up the New York City rail stations passenger stations in general. Well, they were caught. They were caught in Canada. Yes, they were. Their plan was thwarted. They're on trial right now in Canada. Lucky us. However, we have a little bit of a problem with one of our little jihadists by the name of Shihab Eisenhower. He is creating all sorts of nasty business in the courtroom. He does not want to be tried under Canadian law. It's man-made law. He's insisting that he be tried under Sharia. What was his latest escapade in the courtroom? Yeah. A female bailiff went to handcuff him after his hearing, and he shouted, "You are not my wife. I do not want you touching me." Yeah, yeah. He's the character. So what disappointed me, though, in that particular instance is that the judge said, okay, seeing as we have another male officer in the courtroom, we'll acquiesce to his Sharia demands that the female bailiff do not handcuff him. So the judge kind of, you know, come here, male bailiff. Can you do the honors? Acquiesced to this car animal facing trial in a Canadian courtroom. Yeah. Maybe there's a bit of a parable in there. That, to me, is ignorance, and that, to me, is dimitude. That in itself is enough to ensure that people should be realizing that Islam is coming here and its Sharia is on its way. Sharia is not creeping. Sharia is stomping. Eisenhower is an example of that. He also had a lot to say about the 9/11 attacks. Okay. He was interviewed by a Montreal-based newspaper, and he had something to say about that. He said that the September 11th, 2001 attacks was nothing but a tap on the cheek, and that was compared to the violence committed by the West. Oh, yeah. See, when those Twin Towers fell in this freak show's eyes, that was just a tap on the cheek. That was a little bit of retaliation for the violence committed by the West. He is not denying the charges laid against him, plotting to cause a train disaster in North America. No, because he feels justified. In his words, "We have to liberate Muslim lands and support our brothers and sisters in Afghanistan." He said that NATO intervention in the country was undressing our women. Undressing our women. Yeah. Now, he was born in Tunisia. He's a scientist. He arrived in Canada a few years back. He was upgrading himself at the University of Sherbrooke in Quebec. There he started to read books and websites about Islam, and he joined the Muslim Student Association and began attending the local mosque. Now, the Muslim Student Association. When Paul gets here, he will expand on that and how it is infiltrating your kids' colleges. Now, before he arrived in Canada, you know, he was living in Tunisia. He said he didn't even grow a beard. His parents were constantly on him for what his friends he was making. And he said that he wasn't well because he had strayed from the path of a righteous Islam. It's only when he got into Canada, keep in mind, that he discovered true Islam and all of its good ideologies. You see, now he was a lapsed Muslim because he wasn't well when he was back in Tunisia, but now he's in Canada enjoying all the rights and privileges of a democracy. He is now a good Muslim, recognizing what Islam means. He's being a good Muslim and spreading the word of one true religion and how there can only be one caliphate, and that is of Islam. Now, I said that there were two of them running around the BRL yards, plotting, you know, trying to plant bombs, get them sent off from Niagara Falls, Ontario, into Toronto, Niagara Falls, Ontario, into New York City. Well, his cohort was, he's being pretty quiet, and he's behaving himself in the chat room. His name is Raed Jasser. So there, we've got both of them here. We've got Raed Jasser, who's actually being pretty quiet about things, and we've got ourselves, our lovely little Shihab Eisenhower. They're both sitting in an Ontario courtroom under charges of terrorism. Yes, that's right. It goes on and on and on. One particular case in Canada. One particular case in Canada. Never mind what's going on in the United States and what England endures as well. England is under siege. The United States, under siege, because we are hearing story after story after story about so-called workplace incidences where people are being shot up. Fort Hood with Nidal Hassan. He murdered 14 people. And I say 14 because one of those people that he slaughtered was pregnant. And then we have that latest going on. I'm just bringing it up to me right now. So if I'm lapsing, please forgive me. Things are going on out there, that, and the media, they're playing them down. And quite frankly, I'm getting quite sick of it. We know there is an Islamic issue in the West, and we know that the stark reality of Islam cannot escape us any further. And no matter how much the mainstream media tries to butter it up, they cannot hide from the fact that we are no longer stupid. We are not sleeping any longer. We are well aware of what Islam entails and what Islam is capable of. I am hoping that what happened in Pakistan and in Kenya over the weekend will be one more wake-up call for people to realize that Islam is not the religion of peace, but Islam is it bent on the caliphate, and Islam is determined to conquer until that caliphate is complete. Now, whether or not they accomplish that is up to you and me. We have to start talking about it. We have to start discussing. We have to start educating ourselves about it. Enough is enough. Time is wasting. We have the clocks. They have the time. See, Islam is very, very patient. They've been sitting around for 1,400 years. They are now engaging in full frontal attacks, not only with the kinetic jihad, but with the civilization jihad. I'm going to take a break, though, for a quick sec. Normally, you know, I wouldn't take a break. I usually wait until... Well, actually, you know what? I'm not going to take a break because I was going to call Paul, but Paul called me instead. So Paul is right here. My guest has come into the studio, and I am so grateful for that. I am going to bring Paul on the air right now, and just to remind you, that is Paul Sutcliffe, my guest for tonight, the author of Stealth Jihad, Phase 2, Target American Colleges. I am going to let you explain, I'm going to let you listen to him explain as to why he was compelled to write this book and why I think it's one of the most important books I have read in a very long time and why I feel it should be required reading for everybody everywhere, and especially with parents who are sending their children off to colleges and universities in the United States in particular. And with that, I bring on my guest, Paul Sutcliffe. Paul, welcome to the show, and good evening.
Good evening. It's nice to be here.
It's very nice to have you here on the Red Fox Blogger. I was just giving a brief overview of your book that you read, and I was going to go into the introduction. This book, to me, is very compelling in that you unravel and reveal a lot of issues about what is exactly going on the American college campuses. And, Paul, I must say, I don't think it really stops in the United States. I see this happening in Canada as well. But you unraveled a lot of information that is so vital for us to understand. But why did you write this book? What compelled you to write it? You got a phone call one day.
Yeah, I am I'm a special education teacher. I graduated with my master's out of Nazareth College, and I'm part of a local 912 group. And somebody in the 912 group said to me, did you know the International Institute of Islamic Thought is at Nazareth College? And I heard that name, and I keep going, I've heard that name before. I've heard it before. So I spent 2 or 3 days doing basic research. And what do I find out? They're the Muslim Brotherhood. I'm like, oh, my God. This used to be a college campus that was Catholic. I'm not Catholic. And I was just shocked. I was just shocked that they would be there. So I wrote a letter, quick letter, to the president of the college, and he would not reply to me. So I decided I'd take it public. And I went to the LinkedIn alumni site, and I started posting questions. Does anybody know what this group is? And I started listing and who the professor is. I didn't know the professor's name who brought it in. People told me the name. So I start looking him up. And I'm like, oh, I was looking for the Muslim Brotherhood connection. Now I've found it. This guy, his name is Dr. Shafiq. And Dr. Shafiq posts on his curriculum vitae, his resume, that he brags about who his doctoral advisor was. And that's unusual. I'm in education. I knew it was unusual. So I look him up. He brags his doctoral advisor is Dr. Ismail Farouqi. Dr. Ismail Farouqi is one of the founders of the Muslim Student Association. He's the founder of International Institute of Islamic Thought and a few other Muslim Brotherhood organizations. So I'm like, so he's telling everybody he's Muslim Brotherhood, but nobody knows it if you're a Western fool like I was before I decided I needed to research this group. I learned an awful, awful lot. I wrote some articles about Nazareth being influenced by the Muslim Brotherhood, and people were telling me it's not enough. It's not enough. And to get ignored for a year, so I wrote a big article on Nazareth, and I published it on a little website, and I got a little national recognition from Victoria Jackson and from people like Ryan Morrill. We actually talked, and it was just amazing what they were saying. Ryan took the article and looked at it, and he ended up writing another good article, which is almost a year from the date that I discovered it. It was last May or April about. He wrote an article about Muslim Brotherhood on a college campuses. And guess who was listed? Number one on the list was Nazareth College. And it had a nice picture.
Lovely.
So I called the college president's office and I said, you know how you've been ignoring my phone calls for a year and not replying to emails or whatever I've sent to you? I says, now you're a national embarrassment. Thank you very much. And she's like, what are you talking about? I said, can you look at this website for me? And I give them the Clarion Project address, and she reads the headline, and she looks at the picture of the college, and she's reading. She's like, oh, my God. She drops the phone and runs off.
That is interesting.
Oh,
she got into the eyes of Claire Lopez of the Clarion Project. I love it.
I got blacklisted on that alumni site for asking questions.
Dear.
Now, I have never been allowed back on. I mean, I'm not blacklisted from other alumni things, but that is extremely offensive. And for asking questions. The people who were offensive were the ones who were talking to me. They were using profanities and things like that. How dare I question somebody? I'm sorry. I'm an American citizen. My job as an educator, every educator's job, is to question things, to help people discover what is true. That's what we're taught. So why are you trying to hide this? And it came out after I can thank Dr. Shafiq for telling me most of this stuff on his CV. He gave me a lot of this information about how they came in. They came in through him bringing things in with the president of the college, who is Jewish. This just blew my mind. They actually physically left the college, went down to Herndon, Virginia, I call that the seat of the Muslim Brotherhood. And that's where they went and met the people down there, and that's where things started for Nazareth. They gave Nazareth $500,000 for their interfaith chapel. We can thank Brian Hickey for that. Brian Hickey's got his name attached to it. He's one of the head guys with a local bank. He's like vice president of a local bank. And I have no problem saying his name because that's the tie-in. It's called the Hickey Freeman Interfaith Chapel. And, I mean, that's what it is. I stood outside. I was trying to get my message across to him. I went and I published a little paper called the Independent Chronicle. And sometimes the purpose was to make it a handout thing to hand out to people who just don't use the Internet. So I stood in front of his bank and started handing these things out one day to try and get my message across. I never mentioned his name in my article, but I did mention the Hickey Freeman Center. And I wanted people to know
I was there.
I
find that really interesting in that a Jewish scholar would more or less be advocating for the right for the Muslim Brotherhood to practice in the institutions of learning.
You're asking the right question. And it took me a while to start thinking about who I should blame. Because, I don't like to point fingers, but fingers need to be pointed here. I actually wrote a letter to the head of the social studies department or history department, and I told her I blamed her. I says, you're supposed to be the scholar. You're supposed to be able to say, sorry, these guys are dangerous. You are the one. And I blamed her. I mean, I pointed my finger at her type thing. And she says, she wrote me back, well, they're not doing anything bad lately. And I'm, I keep thinking about, what do you mean by lately? I says, now, when I did my research on this book, I came across things that the FBI were tracking them and the stuff that they were saying I put in my book. And I have yet to go and do what I want to do. I'm going to go down and I'm going to videotape me handing her a copy of the book yet. But she didn't know some of the information in my book. Okay, everything I put in the book is public information.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't put
anything
in the I document every little thing, and I do it with footnotes because I hate endnotes.
Paul, that's something I want to talk with you about a little later on, too, is the bibliography that you put in this book is just absolutely phenomenal. And when I was talking with people about it, I said, look, this is one book that will never leave your desk because you'll be referring to it time and time and time again because of the bibliography as well is the information inside. But you have everything in here. You have the links. You have the articles. You have the websites. You have everything in here. And this is quite an exhaustive piece of work that you added to the book. That must have taken you just as much time to write the book.
Actually, I was a writer. I actually teach Microsoft Office to adults as well as kids, and some of this is just very, very simple stuff for me to do because I usually get paid to be an indexer as well on the side. So things like those things are real simple. With Microsoft Word, it's so simple. It didn't take me any time. I had to have a way to keep track of things, so I kept my bibliography on that document. And I look at a my book is, if you think about how, my book is extremely short. I mean, it's only probably 70 pages of text, and then it's got the bibliography, it's got an appendix, and it's got other things with it. But the purpose of the book is to be able to say to the person who says, "I've only got 5 minutes to listen to you." And that's what these people are on the board of trustees who will not listen to you. Well, give me 5 minutes. All right, I had put together a 20-minute presentation because I figured if I get to get a chance to speak to them, if they actually would listen, they would sit down with me for 20 minutes. No, they won't. Okay, so I talked to a vet, and I have to credit him with being a great man of honor. He sat down with me. He says, "I'm on board with you 100%. I said, "I agree with everything in the presentation, but you have to be able to talk to these people within 5 minutes and say everything." And
How much? That's not enough time.
Well, I did it. I put together a little PowerPoint. Yes, and it's online on YouTube. If you look up, I think it's 10 reasons, top 10 reasons why every college should stop all relationships with IIIT or the International Institute of Islamic Thought. And it's 5 minutes and 40 seconds long, and it lists 10 reasons why we should, why you should not be connected. The guy who runs the daily, the global Muslim Brotherhood report has looked at my, and he said it's accurate, my thing, and said it's entirely accurate. He hasn't written a review, but I've been talking to everybody I can. I want my piece, I put my name on it. People have told me, you should put a pen name on that. You're stupid. It's dangerous. I said, you know what? My problem is, if I'm afraid to put my name on it and I don't put my name, I'm not standing up.
Exactly.
I'm cowering. And I have to say, you know, I'm a Christian, and I'm of the belief that God arms people. He's got a coat of armor he gives people, and he coats your front, and he's supposed to have your back. All right. That's how it's supposed to be. And I have to trust him. And I was just talking with my pastor about it last week, and I can't live in fear. I have to live, you know, God's going to protect me. And I don't care if that means it's my time to go. I really don't care. I have to stand up and be able to say, this is what's true. I mean, my father, it says on the back of my book, my father said, I don't even remember what the topic was, but one day he turned around and said to me, you are responsible for what you know. And I can't tell you how much of an impact that has had on my life in so many different ways. But if I'm responsible for what I know, what am I doing with that? I mean, have I done something with it? And that's what it comes down to. I have people calling me from different corners of the United States that have actually read the book. It's not a big sale book yet, but my whole purpose is to get the word out. I mean, I'm willing to make a deal with people who want to send it to, if they want to call me and, you know, give me $8 for the cost, I'll bite the cost of delivery and if you're going to send it to a president of a college or a board of trustee member, if I can verify they're there, pay for that. I mean, that's what I want to see. I want to see every college president get a copy of this book. And I want to see people come up and volunteer to send, you know, to give the $8 to pay for. I'll bite the bullet and I'll pay for the shipping.
I would like to see every college professor
member should get what? Yes. What is scary is everything in the book is public information. It's all there and it's all verifiable. I don't understand why people aren't upset. It's just like this outrage going on right now where we have a president who is armed terrorist and no one understands why that's wrong.
Absolutely. What's going on in Syria right now and with President Obama wanting to arm the so-called rebels, although they are Al-Qaeda packed.
And this is the stuff that's getting me. I mean, I sent a copy of my book to my representative, who actually is Louise Slaughter. She had sent me, I had written to her about the Muslim Brotherhood being involved in Benghazi and being the parents of Al-Qaeda and Hamas. I said, you need to call the State Department and ask them to be declared a terrorist group. So she writes me back a letter. Ignores the fact that I said they were the parents of Hamas and Al-Qaeda and only talks about them not being. And she says there's no evidence they're involved in Benghazi. So I wrote back a huge paper citing Waleed Shubat's research on how they are involved in Benghazi. I gave him a lot of, I just cited the stuff, information that he used, and I listed him as a source. I said, but here's the information. Why don't you know this? I said, you're either stupid or you're purposely lying to me. In either case, you're not standing up for the safety of American citizens. I've called 2 or 3 times now. I'm going to be calling next week and saying the same thing. Why haven't you done this? Now we know they were involved.
And keep dogging them. And I'm going to go on a little bit of an aside here, but Paul, you brought up something very interesting when you were discussing things like holidays and so on, and there is an issue in Maryland going on right now about advocates calling for the shutdown of the public schools for Eid al-Adha, for example. They want the school shut down on October 15th, and this brings us back, Paul, to one of our little buddies, and that's Zainab Shadri. And she's the vice president of the Council's Maryland chapter and a co-chair of the coalition of this initiative to ensure that October 15th be recognized as a formal holiday and that schools be shut down in Maryland for that holiday. Which is ironic is that they have a certain person on their side, and that's George Leventhal, and who is Jewish. And he is saying, well, yeah, it's not fair. We have Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Why can't the Muslims have their mandatory holidays? So this is just getting—it's all over the map with me, Paul.
I have a simple solution to it all. Okay, well, look at—I'm willing to do it this way. I'm willing to give them their holiday. Here's the catch, and I want it the same way for every religion. If the majority of the people in that school are Christian, sorry, we're not celebrating that one. If the majority mm-hmm. of people are Jewish, sorry, we're not celebrating the holiday. Okay, we're looking at the majority of the population. Granted, there are, if we give everybody their holidays, it's not going to work. The kids won't be in the building. It's not going to happen. I mean, I've seen people who are Wiccans. Sorry, we're not going to celebrate Wiccan holidays, too. If we give them their holiday, we have been a, quote, Christian country. I'm sorry, that's the law, the way it's written, and I say it's
absolutely.
Law because it's written in the Constitution. It's written in the Declaration of Independence. We talk about a benevolent God. I'm sorry, if you want to read the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, you'll find a benevolent God.
Absolutely.
It's there.
And that is something, too, that really upsets me. And we're, as my listeners know, and as you know, Paul, I'm up here in Canada. We're seeing the same noises being made all over the place, particularly in Toronto. Now Canada is generally a very, very we're a fairly conservative, very quiet bunch. It's the urban centers that make the most noises. It's the liberals that you always hear about in the national dailies, Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver. It's the liberals that make the most noise. But for the most part, Canada, flyover territory Canada, we're very, very conservative, and we are very protective of our traditions and our rights as Canadians, and that is to celebrate Canada and be a Judeo-Christian country as which the foundation of Canada
is
based upon.
Your Constitution also declares a Christian God. I mean, it's not – we're not stupid people. We don't forget our history. And this is part mm-hmm. of destroying your country from within.
Exactly.
They want us to forget. They want us to not know the truth. In America, in New York State, I'm going to pick on New York State because I'm a teacher here. I was required to teach history, and one of the test questions – for Islam, it has to do with how did Islam spread, and it's on every single global studies regents exam in New York State. It's been on every year. And what their answer is, how does it spread? They say it spreads through cultural diffusion, which is the sharing of knowledge between cultures. Sorry, that is a lie from the pit of hell.
absolutely.
The truth of the matter is, it was convert or die. The sword is what converted people, not listening to them. They feared for their lives. And so what I would do is I would tell my kids, here's the historical documents. I mean, we would read how things happened during that time period. Oh, it says convert or die. We would read exactly what happened there. And we're using historical primary source documents. And then they'd say, well, why do they want you to answer this way? I says, you know what? I have to tell you what New York State wants you to answer. All right? They're not going to put you the right answer on the test, and they're not going to give you the right, you know, if you put the right answer down, they're still going to mark you wrong. But I have no choice. So I have to tell the truth to my kids. And I cannot lie. I want my kids, my own children, I wanted to be able to say, Dad's the best, first and best resource for any question you have. I have to be able to tell my students that same thing. if we
exactly.
do not.
Exactly, and you
do.
Are. Yeah, and you're the father of an 18-year-old son.
Yes.
Who will be probably headed off to college pretty soon.
He will be in January.
Oh, really? But you know that's exactly it. When I started reading your book and I was reading the very beginning, I went, "This man is not only a scholar, but he's also a dad, and he's sending his son off to university or college pretty soon." So this must have been even more closer.
I guess he's going where there is the Muslim Student Association.
He knows.
It's funny.
When I was reading the book, you touch upon four major groups in particular. Of course, the Muslim Student Association, the Islamica Society of North America, the International Institute of Islamic Thought, which I kind of find to be an oxymoron, and
you
of course the Council of American Islamic Affairs, and of course that's CARE. But I was also particularly intrigued by your discussing the Muslim Student Association, in that that is pretty much a breeding ground for further jihadists down the road. That if you belong to the Muslim Student Association, you're kind of making your bona fides, in that you would be eligible to engage in jihad, whether that be kinetic or whether that be civilization. That frightened me.
It's the recruiting ground, and that's what I wanted people to see. It's recruitment. I mean, even past Muslim Brotherhoods have come publicly. It's been in newspapers, and people have, I mean, they've openly stated this. So I picked those particular four groups because those are the four groups that keep being seen on college campuses. And I also picked them because those are the ones who are, and I would say if you want to do something illegal, you want to do something sneaky, usually don't go put your name in the newspaper, and you don't go, these people do. These people do put their names in the newspapers. These people are there. Okay, so this is one of the things I will say is stupid about the organization. They publicly tell people they're doing things. and we have too many idiots in America. It's not just liberals. We have too many, ignorant people. I have to conclude myself there. Until I'd heard the name of this group and connecting it with a college that I went to, I hadn't really looked in. I blame myself. I'm one of those guys that likes to research things and find things out for myself. Somebody tells me something, I got to check out and see if it's true. So, I mean, I learned the whole concept called taqiyya, and it really shocked me. Here in the Christian world, I studied to be a pastor at one point. And we tell, in Christ, we're told if we deny Christ, he'll deny us. Sorry, you can't do that. But the Muslim faith tells you, hey, you know, if they're going to, you know, say anything against us, you can say things against your own faith just to hide who you are, because as long as it protects the Muslim faith, and there any concept they have of protecting the Muslim faith, you can lie about it.
You bring up the best example of that in the book, and that involves Sahil Khan. And he was the one in a 1999 speech at the Islamic Society of North America conference where he said that there was no Muslim Brotherhood in America, but he was caught cold dead in his tracks when he was called, I believe he was called to stand as a witness at the Holy Land Foundation trial. And
I didn't know he was.
It turned out that he was actually engaging in the biggest taqiyya we could imagine.
I had no idea.
In 1990, I'm not too sure.
In 2007,
so he'll, yeah, he's involved in something like that. But it was, yeah, actually, yeah, the Holy Land Foundation trials were earlier than that. So my apologies. But he was involved in something in which he was caught dead in his tracks, so that he was engaging in taqiyya, where he said that there's no Muslim Brotherhood in America, and he actually had to retract that at one point. I thought that was an excellent reference that you would bring up, though. Sahil Khan is a huge Islamic thorn in the side of the United States. This guy is slippery as an eel. He slides in and he slides out. He is all over the place.
And he is, the scary part for me with him is I'm a conservative, and he's on the board of the American Conservatives. The American Conservative Party, and I pick on him I can thank the Political Chicks show for making me more aware of that. And I'm just what I consider myself is just an average Joe, and who got upset and started connecting dots. And that's where, I mean, once you start connecting dots, it gets scary. And when you, I mean, I actually have a diagram when I put all my research. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of Inspiration Program. It's an excellent program to help writers and who are doing research or writing in any kind of way. But, and it's cheap. That's the only thing about it, which is good. But
yeah.
I started putting all my research into, it's a pictorial diagram. And I just put, it's just amazing to see who's connected to who. That's what, when I was doing this, and it, the diagram kept growing and growing, and that's what got scary to me. And because
exactly.
I was
and just to apologize,
format,
and just to apologize, my listeners, when I refer to the Holy Land Foundation trial of 2000 and or 1999, it actually took place in 2007, and
yeah.
that did involve ISNA. And, of course, this is when Sahil Khan came out in 1999 and said that, oh, no, there was absolutely no Muslim Brotherhood involved here in America, and he was caught in his tracks later on, and he had to retract that.
Well, he did. Actually, last year, he didn't recant it again. And the year before, he got caught.
He was supposed to.
2 years ago, he made a statement. He made the statement again publicly 2 years ago. And last year, he was given a chance to recant it, and he refused.
Some sort of protectionism going on there.
Yes.
You bring up a lot. Oh, go ahead.
I mean, he's just a small, I look at him as a small piece. I picked on him because he's again, if you're going to do something stupid, don't let people know you're doing something stupid. Don't tell your name, but he does it. And that's why I pick on him. One of the things that, I just want to bring back, we were talking about how it's a recruitment center for the Muslim Brotherhood and for terrorism. Is in the book, there's a chart of those people who have been connected to the Muslim Student Association and who have committed crimes, terrorist crimes. And I read this chart on another radio station, and they flipped out. The people didn't know how to take it, because the guy calls in and says, well, you know, Christians do these things too. I says, okay. So I says, just give me 5 minutes. I says, listen to me. Don't interrupt me for a few minutes. And then I want you, when I'm done, I want you to name one Christian terrorist. All I want is just one. So I began to list off names like Ali Asad Chandia from Montgomery College, who was the president of the Muslim Student Association there, who in 2006 was found guilty of 3 counts of providing conspiring to provide material support for Lashkar-e-Taiba. And then there was Muhammad al-Qureshi of Arizona State University, who was a past president of the Muslim Student Association, who in 2003 was charged by a federal grand jury with 2 counts of illegal possession of firearms. He had been gone to President Bush's ranch to case it for an attack. He got caught. I can go on and on with this list. I mean, it's a long list, and it's a growing list. That is the saddest thing about it. And we have, of course, the last name I have on this list is the Boston Bomber, who played soccer on a team for the Muslim Student Association.
Absolutely.
They're all connected. This most recent thing that we have over in in Kenya, the mall. It's Kenya, right?
The Somalians,
the Somalians on the mall. I'm trying to find people, the right people to talk to, but I would love to know who's checking these people's records as far as count. Is anybody asking the right questions? That's the other thing I find out. Our reporters don't know how to ask the right questions anymore. When I call, there was an event. There was a terrorist act out in California near a college, and I call there and I say, do you know if this guy was involved in the Muslim Student Association? What do you mean? Excuse me. I actually said to him, are you stupid? I says, did you not ask this question? I mean, you do know this is the Muslim Brotherhood, and this is terrorist breeding grounds. Why are you not asking these questions? And they're like clueless. And I'm concerned. I mean, we used to teach people to go and dig their teeth into things, to go look for the meat and stuff, and that would make a great article. I don't know what they're teaching in journalism school. I'm really scared for America when they don't grasp that you need to get in and dig your teeth into a story, because if they're only taught, well, you just do namby-pamby this, namby-pamby that, and that's considered a story, I have issues. they're not helping us.
Exactly, and it's funny that you bring that up, because exactly. I have a comment, though, from my chat room, and it's from Agador, and he is saying that, well, they do know how to ask the right questions, they just won't. Do you suppose that would tie into the fact that we are so afraid of offending the Muslim that we know what to ask for, per se, but we won't, because we're afraid that we will get not only the political backlash, but we may get the legal backlash, in that Islam and Muslims in the United States in particular, they're so familiar with the label of racism, and that they use that against us.
Islam
they
is not a race.
Absolutely.
Islam is a race.
Yeah, we know that.
We know that. Right there. But I think what it really is Western ignorance. Like I say, I blame myself too. I studied to be a pastor, and I never felt the need to learn about Islam to the depth I have now. And I think here's the thing that we did. We got to stop and think, how did we beat communism? And this is what we really need to do. How did we beat communism? Well, we educated everybody. What does communism really teach? What is communism really about? It's what are those people really like? What did they do? And we tell the kids in schools. We taught them through elementary school. We taught them all the way through high school. You go to college, you would hear something on it. Okay, what do we teach about Islam? You want to know what we've been teaching about Islam in high school in New York State? We talk to them about the five pillars of Islam. That's all they teach. That is it. Nothing more. There are five pillars of Islam. Oh, and they have a code of behavior. That's it.
Absolutely.
Nobody says, okay, their code of behavior. It includes pedophilia. It includes killing people who are not Muslim. Why aren't you teaching this stuff in America to people? You want to combat terrorism, Islamic terrorism. Why are we not educating our people about what Islam believes, what Sharia teaches? These are serious issues. All you need to do in America is...
I have a chat room that is just jumping here. They're hanging on to everything you're saying, Paul. And I have another comment from my chat room. And it's a question comment. And this comes from Eric. And Eric is also a high school teacher, by the way. But like he's a high school teacher, I mean. Like he's also a teacher, like you are, is what I mean. But he wants to know what primary source documents exist that demonstrate that Islam was not spread through trade or through cultural diffusion, except as we know it, but by the sword. And I find that a rather fascinating observation.
Yeah, there are a lot of source documents. There's a lot of primary source documents. You can find translations of it. I went to Iranian, and I went to it's been so long since I taught the topic. I don't have them on hand in my head right now. But what I had done when I discovered that this is what I've been told to do, the internet was just, it was young, but the information was still out there. And what I did was I basically I typed in, that's right, conversion by the sword, and various things. And I found Arabic documents that had been translated into English, and I used those. There's a lot of good sites out there that will provide source documents. They want to be able to tell the truth. I mean, I look at it this way. The reason I wrote my book the way I did, was citing the sources and showing the sources right on that page, was because I wanted people to say I'm not a liar. I wanted people to be, I didn't want to be in trouble for my job. And it's actually something people tell me I should be afraid of, because I'm telling this, and I says, well, you can't, I mean, what are you going to do? You can't fire a guy for telling the truth. And that's what I'm getting.
No, you absolutely cannot, especially when that truth is backed up by fact. I mean, there's documentation out there. I mean, people, this is what Paul is trying to, you know, share with you, is that this book that he wrote, believe me, this stuff did not does not come out of the top of anybody's heads. This is all fact, this book. I have the link up there in the show highlights, ladies and gentlemen, on where you can obtain this fantastic book. And like I say, you will not want to have it too far away from your fingertips as a reference point. I highly recommend it, not only for parents who have children entering the colleges in the United States of America, but those in Canada, the UK, but I recommend it for everybody, because there are some things in here that, as you know, I have been studying Islam for a number of years, and reading this book, I literally had to grab my pen and write things on, write notes and put tags in. It was just absolutely crazy, and I knew I just had to get in touch with Paul Sutcliffe, and please come on my show. Paul, I've been keeping you. We're nearly at the top of the hour, and what I usually like to do, can I keep you for a little bit?
Sure.
I want to take a little bit of a break.
Okay.
And that will give you and myself a chance to refresh our teas, our coffees, and this is an inside joke for Michelle, my beer. But give everybody a chance to go grab a refreshment and come back here and give Paul a chance to catch his breath. We have a lot more to discuss here on the program tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Paul's book, there is so much in here. I have so many questions, and believe me, you're going to want to stick around, because we are going to get into some pretty meat and potato stuff, and that includes the explanatory memorandum, and how a Maryland Transit Authority police officer brought that to worldwide attention. And we are also going to discuss how one professor can change a student's life. Paul is gracious with his precious time in that he is spending with me and he's spending with you. I'm so grateful for that. But, Paul, I'm going to let you take a bit of a break, come up for air,
sure.
And sure. How about I see you back here in 3 minutes?
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Okay, guys, I will see you all back here in 3 minutes. And welcome back, everybody. And just to remind you, you are listening to the Red Fox Blogger, and I am your host, Cal Fritzy. And tonight, my guest is Paul Sutcliffe, author and educator. And his latest book is Stealth Jihad, Phase 2, Target American Colleges. And I'm going to let Paul explain to you what that title means. And welcome back, Paul.
Hi. The title, my father has pointed out to me over and over again, I say phase two, and he's, well, what happened to phase one? I says, well, in truthfulness, they got together one day and they looked at each other and they said, phase one's complete, we're here. So I said, what have they been doing?
Exactly.
They're doing two things. One is civilization jihad, and let me explain mm-hmm. what that means first. And we have to go to the Muslim Brotherhood memorandum, explanatory memorandum to get it. And that's important that you can find that. If you want to, you can get your own copy of that for free. Just go online, Google it. You can go straight to one of my favorite sites, which is, I got to think. Eric Fitz Emerson's site. If I can't think.
It's
can't
easy
think
to
right.
Google. Absolutely. Yeah. But that is absolutely correct. The explanatory memorandum. You touched, like, the way you touch on that in the book is absolutely phenomenal. I want to get to that in a minute, but I have a dear friend on the line, and she would like to ask you a question, if that's okay,
sure.
Paul.
Sure.
Okay, this is my friend Anne. Anne is a dear question. Anne is a dear friend, and Anne has a query. And hi, Anne, and welcome to the program. And you have a question for Paul, my dear.
Hey there, Paul. Is this
hi.
The first time that they use the youth in order to be able to do stealth jihad?
I'm sorry, what?
Our generation, now that we have computers and all that kind of fun stuff, people seem to think that we're immune. But is this the first time that they have used the youth, the college kids and so forth? Is this the first time that they use them to get stealth jihad?
No, this has been happening since 1963.
This has been happening since Hitler had a fun time with them back during World War II.
No, during World War II, he used them.
Yeah, he used them.
He was not against them. He used them.
Right, he used them, and we're using them again today.
Well, our president is using them. We are not using them. President is a treasonous, I won't use the word I feel like you're saying, but no, he is a treasonous person and has no right to the office of president for giving weapons to the enemy. According to the Constitution, Article 2, Section 2, he needs to be arrested for treason, period. That's how simple and easy that is. You give weapons to the enemy, according to the Constitution, you go to jail and you get your head cut off or something else like that. That's the law.
Well,
that is the law.
You know what he did as senator back in Kenya, right?
I know he has a brother who was a murderer.
First cousin, Odinga.
I'm sorry. You're correct, cousin. I used the wrong term. Yes. I'm a fan of Wally Schubert also.
And there you go. So, Anne, that's a very fascinating, Anne. And Paul, no, I was never apprised of that. That's news to me, too. And see, I'm scribbling madly on my notepad here beside my computer keyboard going, oh, okay, something else Cal has to look up.
Everybody who's here should go to shoebat.com, shoebat.com, and sign up to get his daily updates. You want to stay informed? I don't want to say I'm religiously reading his stuff, but I'll tell you, the stuff he writes, it's kind of like he has the mindset that I do. And that's one of the reasons I like him. He documents what he has. He doesn't want people to be able to say, you're making this crap up. He wants to be able to say, if you're questioning me, here's the source. He provides that for you. And that's what makes him valuable. besides the fact that he can translate the Arabic into English, he can do that without any question. The fact is that he has those connections in other countries, and I'm just beginning to learn how to do that. Here's an interesting thing. I was in my 912 group. We're talking about social media. And I had an example of how social media, like Twitter, can help us learn what's happening around the world. The day that Egypt's military, I put in quotes, attacked the Muslim Brotherhood, and there was a news release where I think it was 28 people had been shot.
Mm-hmm.
So I had somehow contacted, I don't remember exactly how, but on my Twitter account I had contacted a guy who's in Egypt who seemed to have a conservative mindset. I mean, I don't want to say godly mindset. He just didn't seem to have the Muslim Brotherhood mindset. So I just sent a note out to him, and I said, news reports are saying 28 people dead. And he's like, where did they get that number from? I'm working in the morgue right now. Where did they get that number from? They've only delivered 17 or whatever. It was some number. And he said, there's something interesting about them.
Hmm.
This is what? He says, they've only been shot once in the head or once in the chest. I was like, what? I says, okay, wait a minute. We're talking military coup. Military coup does not shoot people with just one bullet. I'm sorry, you're fighting, you're going to be shot with multiple bullets.
Yeah.
So that was
amazing.
When I had my first clue that the media is portraying. They had the story written before they brought the dead bodies in. Come on. And the morgue didn't even know how many people were coming in. Where did they get this information? I mean, that's what he was asking. How are they writing these stories before they happen? It's actually, I mean, that's what they're doing. And
almost
that's
like a Pollywood
stuff.
Movie.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that's the stuff we're learning.
I'm going to give Anne one more comment or question before I let her go. And Anne, thank you so much for calling in. Do you have a final comment or question for Paul? Before I let you go, honey?
I don't think the college kids realize what they did during World War II by helping Hitler and becoming his youth. What we need to be able to do is find a way to get through to these college kids around the world and let them know that what they do is going to be basically World War III. I don't think they're thinking about it. They're being taught to hate. Do you have any ideas as to how
we can these
college kids and say, you're leading basically an anti-revolution that's going to end up hurting yourself.
Absolutely. And I want to thank you. I want to thank you very much for calling in. I'm going to let Paul address that for you then.
Thank you, Olfaktiwan.
You bet,
Anne. It's not World War III. It's World War IV. And we can thank that comment from former director of CIA director, William Casey. William Casey told us that the Cold War was World War III. And he calls this war on terrorism World War IV. And that is I believe that is the correct terminology for it. And she's bringing us back to one of the comments that you were going to discuss, the influence on kids. I had originally designed to put in my book a chapter on how easily influenced teenagers' young minds are. And I never felt comfortable about it because if I'm a kid reading a book and start saying I'm easily influenced, I'm probably going to throw it away. And I didn't feel like it had a place. But I could write about the dangers of the professors or the dangers of these groups.
Exactly. And that is exactly what intrigued me. That was one of the most intriguing aspects of this book, and that is the teachers. How can one professor negatively affect a person's life? And I was thinking, oh, maybe they're just going to espouse something and it may put a rote in your child's mind. For example, they may be parroting what they're hearing, and they're being easily influenced by that. And what I mean by that is that perhaps they're going to be sitting in a classroom, and a teacher will be lecturing, and they'll be filling the kids' heads with this rhetoric, and your next thing you know, your children are doing nothing but parrot what the professor is saying with no linear thought of their own or any source of avenue for a rebuttal. But when I read the chapter and I realized what you meant, can one professor change a child's, not a child because they're young adults at this point, but can one professor change a student's life? And you brought up the issue of selective service or federal security clearance, and I found that rather fascinating. I would love for you to expand on that one, Paul.
In the book, I mentioned two people. When you're a teenager, you're young 20-something, you don't know what you're going to do for the rest of your life. You have no clue.
Mm-hmm.
One person in my life, I still remember my mom came back and laughed one day because this good friend of mine, nice guy, outstanding person, decided he wouldn't register for selective service as his little personal, you know, stand against that concept or stand for what he considered peace. Okay. Later on in his life, this guy's a super genius. I mean, super genius, multimillionaire based on his genius right now. So a little later on in his life, he gets a federal job. Guess what he has to do in order to get the federal job? Oh, go register for selective service. Otherwise, he gets fired. Oh, well, guess what he did? He registered. Okay. Now I have another guy. I'm later on in my life, he's in his late 20s. And one day, and he's doing work, and he's going to U of R, and the CIA looked at something he was researching. He's working on his PhD and said, hey, you're just the kind of guy we want. And so he's like, would you be willing to pay for my PhD? And they made some kind of deal. I'm sure they did. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, he had to take off. The military intelligence came to us and asked us questions about him, if he was a good guy, bad guy, or not law or what. They wanted to know everything. So here's the thing. They can come and interview us. The problem that we're not talking about here is who else was influenced. The law requires people applying for a security clearance to list out foreign influences. It says the guideline for foreign influence, foreign contacts and interests may be a security concern if the individual has divided loyalties or foreign financial interests may be manipulated or induced to help a foreign person, group, organization, or government in a way that is not in U.S. interests or is vulnerable to pressure or coercion by foreign interests. Okay, here's the thing to think about. I know Canada probably has something similar to the CIA.
Yes.
They know who is on these campuses, who is dangerous. They know. They're not telling everybody because by some stupid concept that the FBI here and your group in, I don't know if it's the Royal Mounted or not, and who would
Royal
be doing
Mounted
that in Canada?
Canadian Police and CSIS, yeah, that's the Canadian Intelligence Security, yeah.
Okay. I have no clue in my mind as to why they don't do something about these people. I can't understand that concept. I can't get over that. That's the thing that really bothers me.
Well, one thing that really bothers us too is that technically our hands are tied because our Constitution also was rewritten in 1982. And there were a lot of clauses in that Constitution. One of them was multiculturalism and the emphasis on discrimination. And Islam, unfortunately, seems to enjoy the status of a protected religious organization in that if you target religious organizations, you're engaging in discriminatory activities and that can open up for a lawsuit. I don't know. I'm just giving the meat and potatoes of it all. But it seems that this is another thing, is what they do, Paul, is that they use our very constitutions against us. And, of course, that is the civilization jihad of which we speak.
The thing that I want to go back and just we're talking about civilization jihad, you have to understand what they mean by that. And they say that in their, do you mind if I read that out?
Absolutely, please do.
Okay, according to them, this is their book, their concept of, I'm reading right off the Muslims Brotherhood Explanatory Memorandum. It says, quote unquote, this is from number 4, Understanding the Role of the Muslim Brotherhood in North America. Again, it's a document they wrote. It says, the process of settlement is the civilization jihad process with all the word means. The Ikhwan, which is the word for Muslim Brotherhood, must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad. By America, they mean all of North America. In eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within, look at Obama, and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of believers, Muslims, so that it is eliminated. And God's religion is made victorious over all other religions. Without this level of understanding, we are not up to this challenge and have not prepared ourselves for jihad yet. It is a Muslim's destiny to perform jihad and work wherever he is and wherever he lands until the final hour comes. And there is no escape from that destiny except for those who choose to slack. But would the slackers and the mujahideen be equal? That's one paragraph out of the Muslim Explanatory Memorandum. Just one. It is
absolutely scary. Frightening.
My problem here also is
it's like watching a car accident. It's fascinating, but it's totally frightening. But you cannot look away. But unfortunately, we're the ones who are seeing the car crash. There are so many others around us, either through their ignorance or their absolute outright dimitude. They know there's a car crash out there somewhere, but they're not taking a look. But we are, and we're seeing it, and we're frightened. We're terrified, and we're trying to say to people, look what's going on over there. Look at the devastation over there. Look at the mayhem. Look at the carnage over there. But nobody will look our way.
Yeah. Here's something I want you guys, wherever you live, to do this one thing now. In my neighborhood, I live in Rochester, New York. I teach in the city. Okay. What's happening now, and I have students who are Muslim. Interesting thing about the few students I have had in the past, I had 2 students in one class. Interesting thing, they came over from different countries in different years. Okay. I'm talking, learning more about them and their families so I can help them, talk with their families as well, so I can help them as well. Okay, so I'm learning. Okay. They both came through one place. In America. Where was it? Herndon, Virginia.
Wow.
That area, McLean, Virginia, Herndon, Virginia. And they're like, oh, yeah, okay. And then the other one says, yeah, I was there. And they knew each other. Here's the reason why they already knew this about each other. This should get you. They live less than a block apart. Okay. From Herndon, Virginia to wherever. The Muslim Brotherhood is coordinating the civilization jihad. Understand that they are coming through, getting orders on where to live. I had no concept this was going on until it happened, until my students provided it to me.
That is absolutely frightening. And I have somebody here, and Paul, this is Roger from Far Right No Apologies. He's a radio host right here on Blog Talk Radio as well. And he has a question or comment for you. Hi, Roger.
Hey, Cal, how you doing? Thanks for taking
doing
my call.
Well.
And Paul, you're a godsend, literally a godsend. It is a holy war, and most of what I've heard you speak of, and I'm assuming you're speaking of a book that you've written, which I'd love to get my hands on, as well as follow you on Twitter, as well as having you on my show. I hope this is not too much all at once.
Anytime. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. You're talking about things. You're talking about Egypt and Somalia and Libya, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm very much more afraid right here domestically in the United States with the enclaves of Muslims that set up little villages within cities. My wife and I have a house that we still own that we rented, and it was referred to by the state police of Texas as Little Iraq.
Oh.
Because there were so many mosques and so many Muslims there. It was not a safe place to live. There was a zero tolerance policy after dark. If you did something wrong, you went immediately to jail without any questions. We live in a much nicer but eclectic neighborhood now, with Indians on one side and Filipinos on the other side, and a Castilian Spaniard across the street. So we're quite happy. But I'm very, very afraid for what's happening here in the United States. Places like Detroit, places like Rochester. I'm from New York. I'm very familiar with Rochester, but and other places. Virginia, you mentioned Virginia Beach, and Miami, places like Houston, where we live, are magnets, and these little tiny Muslim villages within our cities, within our towns, are places that are the seeds for the jihadis to grow their domination from. And it's not being reported here in the United States. We're trying on the new media, on the internet, and so forth and so on, but you're not allowed in the United States. Now, we didn't rewrite our Constitution in 82, but we did elect in 2008 a gentleman who in 2006 tried to help his cousin Odinga in Kenya become president over there, and his brother, cousin Odinga, is a Muslim Brotherhood higher up, and when he lost, he destroyed upwards of 80 churches and killed many hundreds of Christians and forced the legitimate ruler to accept him as prime minister and co-leader. And this is our president helping get this going. And the organization CARE in the United States went to the FBI and looked through with the president's blessing. In other words, they had his backing. Their word was the president's word. So whatever they said was the way it was going to be. And they went through every piece of literature, every training material, and every course syllabus, and removed every single thing that they thought would be derogatory to Islam from
the FBI. So they were sanitizing
it. They sanitized the FBI. So now we have FBI agents graduating, and we're supposed to protect us from terrorism that have never been trained about terrorism from their courses. I'm scared.
Roger,
scared.
Could you send me a link for that? Because I would like to share that on my blog, as a matter of fact. It seems like a rather impressive endeavor. It seems like a rather noble cause and everything else. I would really like to share it on my blog. If you could send me a link or something where I could expand on that, I would be so appreciative.
Well, I'll see what I can pull up for you. I'm several
Roger.
Sources, but I'm fascinated by your guest and really looking forward to following you on Twitter, sir, and hopefully we can have you come on the show and help our people understand what's going on a little bit better. We have a president that speaks with the new president of Iran, hoping that by being nice to him, he'll change. Of course, there are hundreds of Christians in prison in Iran, and they're not going to change, and they're going to lie to them because it's allowed. But
exactly.
It scares me to pieces.
Oh, absolutely.
And,
well, you know what?
I am
in touch with Paul intimately because he is a very dear friend of mine. I would love to send him all the information for him to get in touch with you. And
excellent.
You guys could perhaps work out a date or something. Eh, Paul?
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yes, definitely.
All right.
I know
Roger,
that.
I want to thank you. I want to thank you so very much for calling in and sharing that. This is news to me, and believe me, I want to expand on it. And as a matter of fact, I might have you back on my show again so that we can explore this further. But it is great that you called in and spoke with Paul, and I'm glad that I had the opportunity to speak with you on my show.
Well, not a problem. I'm thrilled to know you. I just want to throw one last thing out for not for nothing, as we say in New York, right, Paul? Not for nothing.
Sorry.
After 21 hours of filibustering to do what he could to stop Obamacare from being funded, our Senator Ted Cruz kneeled in prayer for the people that were imprisoned, the Christians that were imprisoned in Iran.
Wonderful.
He didn't go home to bed. He kneeled in prayer in front of the Capitol with the other people praying for the Christians that were in prison in Iran. So this is a great
Wonderful.
Guy. this is a guy that you'll
fantastic.
Get a chance to talk. Yeah.
Wow.
Roger,
so thank you.
You're fantastic.
All right. Thank you for taking my call. Keep up the good work.
Absolutely.
We will.
Hey, I'm going to see you Monday night on your own program. And like I say, Roger has his own program. I put the link in the chat room for the folks. But Roger has his own program. That is Far Right No Apologies. That is Mondays and Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Please be there. And I love the Monday programs. That's Military Monday. And Thursday is As You'll
That's
Have
right.
It. So,
now,
hey,
gonna,
Roger, we're going to see you on Monday.
Okay. My wife and I are both going to pray for you guys. We're going to surround you with
Thank
angels
you.
Of protection. We're all fighting the same fight, and we'll talk with you Monday.
You bet, Roger. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
And like I say, what a wonderful call. And Paul, it's an open line show.
Okay.
But boy, oh boy, the people that have been speaking with you and the people in my chat room, they have all been talking away like crazy. They're so enthralled by what you have to say, and they're really intrigued by this book. I, in particular, like I say, this is not a book, ladies and gentlemen, that you don't want too far away from you. I have a few more questions about this. We're getting down to the wire. I've got like 15 minutes left with you, and there's still so much more to go through. We touched upon the influences of the professors, and I never really thought of that either. That if you are one thing that you did bring up in that particular chapter about can one professor negatively affect a person's life, you brought up the issue of what if you're a teaching assistant, or what if you're involved in some sort of student association in which that professor is overseeing? What if years down the road, yes, when they do, for example, decide that they want to apply for their security certificate, and the history, well, not the history, but they seem to delve so very, very deeply into every aspect of your life. They go into everything. What if they find out that you have been associated with a professor at your college, and that professor was foreign trained, and he was actually involved in rather nefarious activities overseas, but now he's in the United States and he's teaching your kid?
It's not uncommon, which is the sad thing. The nefarious activities, I can't document. I don't have any exact documentation, but the one thing I'm looking at, I mean, I mentioned a professor who goes out on his vacation holiday, you know, between classes, and he starts, you know, hey, let's raise money for Hamas. Let's raise money. Oh, wait a minute. Hamas is a terrorist organization?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
Hello.
Now,
what's going on here?
You have a kid that's in his class, you know, and I'll tell you, I went to a wonderful college. I'm spoiled. I went to Roberts Wesleyan, and I'll give them a plug. And my professors used to say, "Well, if you're having problems, come on over. You know, we'll give you they'd invite us over for dinner, and they would work with us one on one. I'm not saying professors don't do that anymore. I'm willing to bet they do. They'll sit down and have a dinner maybe on the campus with them. I'm hoping they still do. My concern is, you know, here's a guy. He might seem all nice and hunky dory, but the problem is, this guy could be a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. He could be not. He might be, you know, at that moment not intending to do any harm to your child, but he's having a private meeting with your child, and he's Muslim
exactly.
Brotherhood. So now, 5 years later, your son decides he wants a top security clearance and cannot get it because he's been having private meetings with a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. And you don't know that until that day, 5 years later, when you apply. Guess who knew about that guy? Oh, FBI. Whoa. Wait a minute. They knew about it and they did nothing? That's my problem. I do not comprehend that problem because the FBI has. There was a document I quote in my book from, I think it's from the 80s, and it just angers me that they've known this since the, it was from 1988. In 1988, they were following the Institute of Islamic Thought, the members of the organization around, and they said they were dangerous. They were members of the Ikhwan. The FBI is following them around in 1988. Wait. In 1988, they're following them. They haven't gotten into colleges yet. They're just, IIT is just starting to get into colleges. I mean, it's something new that they're doing. This is crazy. If you know they're doing something wrong in 1988, why don't you go to the college and say, hey, you should not accept money from them. They're dangerous. Well, you know, And here's another thing this gentleman from earlier may or may not know since he's been in New York State. We have a town here in New York called Islamabad. At least they call themselves a town. I have questions about if they're legally a town. According to them, no
Islamabad,
non-Muslims are allowed
yeah.
to go there. Okay, wait a minute. It's a town. It's in New York State. How do you restrict travel on streets to non-Muslims? I would love to know. Besides being a gated, you can't be a gated community in a town. And I can't understand how you can be a town and a gated community. To me, it's not possible. But if they get any of the rights of towns, I'd love to know that. I'm going to be researching that down the road. We have organizations in we have a mosque. Let me just tell you how easy it is to track down Muslim Brotherhood members again. It's easy, and that's a sick, sad thing about it. They know they don't have a problem with letting people know in some sense. They're openly doing it now. The University of Rochester just started their Muslim Student Association last year. And University of Rochester requires their club members to club organizations to post their constitution and bylaws. Well, the University of Rochester's Muslim Student Association posted them. And I'm reading along, and it says directly associated with the Westfall Mosque. Isn't that interesting that Dr. Shafiq of Nazareth College was the imam of the Westfall Mosque? Oh, all connected to one man.
Oh, well, I am telling you, that just is one big, huge so-called coincidence hanging out there, isn't it?
Well, and this is the thing that got me when I was just doing research. There are connections, and people can find them, and they are out there
mm-hmm.
for people just trying, just wanting to do your own research. If you want to do your own research, great. Before things get too far, I did want to share that I have a project I'm working on, and I'm looking for volunteers to help me on. I'm actually doing a Freedom of Information Act research project, and I'm looking for people from all over the country, in Canada, wherever, to get involved with this. And basically, we are sending out a note to the Muslims to the state universities, to the private colleges, asking for expenselessness. I don't know, does Canada have a Freedom of Information Act type thing?
Yes, we do. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely,
well,
we do.
What we're doing is I have a form that I'm sending out, and just trying to get people to send a particular form out and to a local college that you know that the Muslim Student Association is at, and I'm collecting all this information. What we're looking for is, how are they spending their money?
Exactly.
We have
a question from my... Yeah. Oh, go ahead. I'll let you finish up and just let you know I have a question from my chat room.
Okay. Ryan Morrow documented that one case where they're paying an Islamist, a person who promotes terrorism in a college and made that publicly known. So that's the kind of thing where if we can document that, maybe we got a chance to help get them out. That's all.
Absolutely. Sean wants to know about Assemblyman Mark Butler regarding Islamabad.
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm waiting.
And I have a friend, Eric. My friend Eric from Iowa wants you to get in touch with him, and he put his email on
okay, I saw
the.
That.
But did you see that?
Yeah,
okay.
Because
I was just going to write it down and send it to you privately. I wasn't going to recite it over the air.
Okay.
But absolutely, I will make sure that you double get that. This is the thing, and the chat room, and what you're discussing here too is about these enclaves in particular. Is that how can they be gated communities, and how can it be that we're not allowed to approach them? Do you see, we're going to delve a little bit off your book. I don't want to go too far away from it, though, because, like I say, the premise
we're
of this program, ladies and gentlemen, is to discuss this fantastic book. But I am concerned that the points that are being brought up is that it seems that we are looking at Islamic no-go zones, and you bring up the enclave there in New England and New York, and there, of course, we are all familiar with Dearborn, which is nicknamed Dearbornistan. We have them going on in Tennessee. We have the mega mosques going up, and when they build these mosques, they come, and all of a sudden there are no-go zones. We're seeing these happening in Europe, in the United Kingdom in particular. I'm wondering, what is your scenario for maybe 10, 15 years down the road unless we get this in check right away, and whether that means immigration patterns or absolutely insisting that there be a code of conduct of assimilation, whether that be in the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, Australia, New Zealand, wherever that may be. Do we have to rethink our opinion and our approach to the issue of Islam in the North America and in the West in general?
We have to do something that I'm just learning to do. We have to start getting involved in local politics. We have no choice anymore, right? And it's as simple as doing this. If you're a Republican, you need to start going to your Republican committee meetings in your town. If you are a Democrat, you need to start going to the Democrat committee meetings in your town. Become a committee member. It starts at the basic level, okay? Then when the person who's Muslim or the person who is trying to get Sharia going, you're there to say, sorry, I don't want you to run for office. I'm not going to stand behind you. See, they can't change laws until they get into office. And if we're not there to say you can't get into office, it's our fault. We need to be there on that simple level, the base level now. That's how involved, and to the point where I think every Christian's duty, every conservative's duty is to get their butts involved in politics today. If we go back to the founding of America and we go back to the founding of Canada, it's interesting. There was a movement way back in the early 1700s, and we refer to it in America as the Great Awakening. And if we didn't have the Great Awakening, that was the period when two great preachers came through. One was George Whitefield, and the other one was John Wesley came through, and people became Christians. Oh, and what happens when you become a Christian? You have to learn to freaking read. You have to, because you have to be able to read the Bible for yourself. So because of those things happening, the learning about freedom became important because you could read it on your own. concepts of communication were different because you could read things for yourselves. You didn't have to trust other people. We need to be involved on the base, the down gritty thing. I go to a meeting once a month as a committee member. That's it, once a month. If you can't sacrifice 1 hour of your time a week, I mean 1 hour a month, I mean that's crazy. I mean, you should be able to give that much. In towns, here's the thing I'm going to say, and I'm going to yell at certain people. You live in a city, and you're not a committee person, somebody should spank you, because there are hundreds mm-hmm. and hundreds of seats in cities, and guess who's filling them? And the Democratic Party, people who are liberal and don't even know who, they don't care who you are. And I'll say the same for the Republican Party. I will blame, again, I'm going to blame the people who live in the city who do not go. I used to live in the city and I didn't know these things. When I tried to get involved in the Republican Party here, I was getting a door slammed in my face originally. So I did what I could to get involved more. Yeah, slamming the door was not a good thing for me because guess what? It makes me want to know more. You need to look at there's seats available in your community. Just to be able to go to a meeting once a month or to say, I don't want you to be on the election ballot at all, or to be able to say yes. That's what we need to be.
Exactly.
We want to start people like Obama. We need to be on those election committees that say, sorry, you can't represent us, not as state senator. You're not going to represent my area. Not as a president, we're not going to put you on it. We're not going to circulate your petition, so you can't get out. I mean, those are the things we need to do. I mean, if it goes that basic,
oh,
and until
exactly.
we do,
exactly. And I have espoused this on my show in the past, and I have explained to my listeners that this is how it starts: is that they start at municipal levels and they build their bona fides that way. Look what we ended up with. We had some sort of a community organizer build bona fides, and next thing you know, he's running the United States of America. But in terms of Islam, they do start out very, very slowly. They start out very deliberately. They start out municipally. They start out statewide or in Canada, provincially. They start out as running for city council or the teachers' the student teacher association, and then they move up because they're bulking up the resume.
Well, and just to even go back to a little bit more about on civilization jihad. Mike,
mm-hmm.
I have twins that are turning 21 this year, and they graduated two or three years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there was like two Muslims in the entire class. All right, now I have a son graduate last year. I'd say about 50% of his class was Muslim. Okay.
Mm.
Civilization jihad is going on. They're being told to move to your area. They're being told to move to, I mean, like next door. They're setting it up. We need to wake up people. We have to start calling people and saying, well, how come they're moving? How did they know to move next door? How do they know to move down the street? We need to wake up and start talking to each other about this happening. We're not doing, I mean, it's until we as a start talking to each other about, oh, they were originally here, they moved here and they moved there. We need to go ask those questions to these people. We need to say, oh, where did you come from? Where did you go first? And when you start seeing those dots connect, well, this one was originally there too. Oh, that's interesting. And that guy down the street, he was also there first. We need to talk to each other about those things. We need to document it. I mean, you need to call the FBI and say, look, this is a connecting dots. I can't tell you. I have no problem calling them. When I learn something that I think they don't know, you know, sometimes I'm right. They didn't know. Oh, Shafiq was connected to the Muslim Brotherhood. They knew something was wrong, but they didn't know how he was connected. They didn't have the evidence. And I said, oh, he stupidly posted online when I talked to them. And they're like, what do you mean he posted online?
I want to give you the last couple of minutes. I want for you to explain to my listeners about the Independent Chronicles.
Oh, the Independent Chronicle is back 2 years ago. I got involved in the 9/12 group, and we sat down and we said to each other, "How do we reach liberals? And some people say, well, why don't we try? I said, no, how do we reach people who are uninformed and only use the Internet for research? So we said, let's try a simple handout newspaper we give away for free. So the Independent Chronicle became that. It was something we just hand out. And if you want a copy anytime, you can contact the host or contact me for through Twitter or whatever, and I'm on Facebook, and I will send you a copy. Request a handout copy, and that's what I do. But the Independent Chronicle has gone a little bit more digital than I ever expected. When I started writing my book, a friend of mine recommended a site called Rebel Mouse, and it's kind of exploded digitally.
It reminds me of that little mouse standing there with the big, huge mouth going, no, I got something to say here.
I thought the name Rebel was so fitting for my paper because it was just funny because here I'm writing about what my local paper refuses to report. And my whole goal was to put this local paper out of business because they will not report some things. But I mean, if you're ever a Democrat and you're running for office, you got free publicity in my area. If you're a Republican, we might mention your page on page 42.
exactly.
If we're out of page, we don't have any space on page 42. You have to be on 54. And
might be able to get it in there.
Yeah, like in the corner in the middle of the hand.
Are you working on a new book?
I have an idea. I'm kind of working on, and part of it will be the result of that Freedom of Information Act piece, getting that information back from the school. I have a poster I'm going to be offering. I mean, if people also contact me and want a free picture of the connections, I'm willing to send that to people for free too.
Fantastic.
It's a picture of how my research and the connections. And through the use of a program called Inspiration, it has the pictures of faces and names and arrows connecting organizations and names and people. And that was originally how I did my research, and it's what originally scared me, the fact that we need to do something. We can't just listen. And I'll say, well, my father's words were so important, and they're so important today. You are responsible for what you know, everybody. And if you're not sharing it, you are guilty of. In some ways, it's almost the bite. You've got to feel guilty of treason because we have to take an action. We can't sit on our butts anymore. We can't be comfortable. We're not allowed to be. And if we want to protect our country, whether it's Canada, whether it's Mexico, whether it's whatever country you're in, if you want to protect your country, you no longer have the luxury of sitting back and expecting somebody else to do it for you. You have no choice. We have in my personal opinion, I'm going to tell you, it's my personal opinion. It's nothing I can document. We have a president who's a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. We have a president who has followed and to down to the letter certain requirements in the Muslim Brotherhood. The day he decided to put in to say okay to gay marriage, I was reading a book by one of the Muslim Brotherhood members who said, talking about how they take over a country. And in his description of how they take over a country, step one, destroy the country's morality. And that was the day he made the announcement.
You know what? That is funny that you bring that up because I've always had a theory about that, in that Muslims will always vote for the liberal because the liberal is much more malleable. And what you're saying, destroy the morality. Liberals are very well renowned for doing that.
Yes.
Absolutely.
They vote for the liberal until there's enough Muslims so they can kill them.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what they do.
Paul, the 2 hours just flew right by, and I have so much more I want to discuss with you. I'm wondering, would you please come back to my program in the future?
Sure, anytime.
And believe me, people were so receptive. The chat room was jumping up and down at one point. They were like, let me in, let me in. No, let me in. You are a wonderful, wonderful man for writing this book, and I really appreciate that you did, because
thank you.
I had been studying Islam for a number of years, but when I read this book, there were things in here that made me go, what? And jaw drop. It is a wealth of information. It's always on my desk right now. If I'm working on a blog or a story, or if I'm researching for a show, I go to this book and go right through it. Like, it's just amazing. I've got little tags all over the place on it, and I try not to bend it too much, because I don't bend pages or anything, but I'm very, very careful with it. But I know I'm going to have to order another copy probably within the next 2 months, because this one is going to get all dog-eared on me.
Well, the next one, the next copy you order will have my three mistakes fixed on it. It is the correct name on the book.
Wonderful.
it's spelled Jihad Faith to Infiltrate American Colleges, and my original one, my artist didn't listen to me well enough, but she's a wonderful artist, and you just learn how to when you're first publishing. It's a self-published book.
Oh, absolutely.
You probably have the book that says about the Bach instead of about the book. And that's the joy of having a small book.
I don't know if I do or not. I didn't notice.
It.
I'll take a look now, though.
When you write a book and it's small, I guess it's called a Bach. So I had to go back and fix a few things.
Oh, I'll have to take a look for that. But I want to, once again, thank you very, very much. I know your time is precious, and all the time you spent with me and my listeners tonight, believe me, is gratefully acknowledged. I want to wish you a wonderful, great evening and a wonderful, blessed weekend. And, Paul, please, we will be in touch again very, very soon.
Thank you. God bless everybody. Thank you all.
You bet. And that was my guest, Paul Sutcliffe, the author of Stealth Jihad, Phase 2, Target American Colleges. And you listen to how he explained why he labeled his book that way. I put all the links in the chat room. You can get the book at Amazon. The link is right there in my show notes. And please also visit the Independent Chronicle. The link is right there at rebelmouse.com. Very easy to find. Just Google. I like what Mr. Sutcliffe had to say. And I know he's just Paul. He's a friend of mine. But he also affords the title of an honorific. The work that he has done on this book is just amazing. It does belong in your library. And not only sitting on a shelf, people, but it belongs to sit right on your desk. Believe me, you'll be referring to it quite often. I'm going to order a copy and maybe put it on the bookshelf just so I keep it in tip-top shape, but the one I have right now is not leaving my desk ever. I want to thank you all who listen to this program. I want to thank you all who come here and strive to learn about Islam and what is going on out there, because Islam is a threat. I want to remind you as well is that I do this radio program twice a week, Fridays, as you know, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, but I also do a Monday afternoon show, and that is at 3 p.m. I do that because I have a lot of guests who call in from Europe. 3 p.m. their time would be, well, if it was 8 p.m. on a Monday, it would be 1 o'clock in the morning, or midnight for them, rather. So I try to keep the Monday afternoon show wide open for my European guests and for my European listeners. I am forever grateful, though, that you listen. I want to thank everybody who joined me in the chat room. There are so many of you. There is Anne Vanderloos who called in. Thank you, Anne. Roger, who called in, thank you, Roger, for calling in and his own radio show right here on Blog Talk Radio. I want to thank Bigfoot. I want to thank Doc. I want to thank my guest, Lady Michelle, Laura Paul, Jeff of East Anglian EDL Radio Show, who is here earlier, Holger of Holger Awakens was here earlier. I had people come in, I had people come out, and I had people listening on other devices, and I have people who will be listening in archive. You guys make it worth my doing this. I'm going to disappear onto a new, well, not, it's not a new show. It's Reactionary Speaks. He's on right now. And I'm going to be joining his panel. And to give you an idea of the Reactionary's network, here you go.
The Reactionary Speak radio program.
Do I really look like a guy with a plan?
You know what I am? I'm a dog chasing cars. I wouldn't know what to do with one if I caught it.
The Reactionary Speak radio program.
I try to show the schemers how pathetic their attempts to control things really are.
The Reactionary Speak radio program.
Introduce a little anarchy. Upset the established order, and everything becomes chaos. I'm an agent of chaos. Oh, and you know the thing about chaos? It's beer.
Friday night, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, here on BTR.
And I'm very late for that, but I'm going to skedaddle over there right now and phone in and join the Rant and Rave panel. We've been carrying on with Rant and Rave all week. I'm excited about that. So I'm going to see you guys over there in a few minutes. I am out of here. I'm out of time. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me, and thank you very much for your enthusiasm with my guest, Paul Sutcliffe. Like I say, I will see you back here on Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, where my guest will be Mike Holt of the Free Australian Party from, you guessed it, Australia. Guys, have a great night. Have a great weekend. See you on Monday. Bye-bye.